Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. This week, Uzbekistan's president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, was in Tajikistan. This was his second visit since becoming the president of Uzbekistan in 2016. Along with lots of funfare, he has been busy with signing dozens of agreements with his Tajik counterpart, which is a sea change compared to Uzbek-Tajik relations under Karimov era. In this episode of Majlis podcast, we will discuss all those and also take a look at what yet remains to be sorted out in bilateral relations of these two neighbors, what the timing of this visit tells us, and what comes next. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Selimjan Ayubov, the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service, locally known as Radio Azadi. Alisher Sadiq, the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, locally known as Ozotlik. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, colleagues. So, Selimjan, let's start with you. So, Mirziyoyev was in Tajikistan for his second trip as the head of the state. So, what he has been doing there?
Thank you. First of all, he met at the airport by Mr. Rahmon, by the Tajik president, personally, by the president himself. That's also a kind of indication. And both sides signed 36 documents, agreements, memorandums, and so on. Both presidents pointed out the successful expansion of the relationship, and they brought in a lot of numbers, a lot of statistics, pointing out that everything is going good even in the era of the pandemic, and promised to increase the trade turnover between the countries to $1 billion in 2022. Then the evening they spent with a lot of music and dancers as previous time, and today on June 11th, both presidents traveled to the north of the country, to Hojand.
Yeah, these 36 documents that they signed, is there anything, Alisher, that stands out among them to you?
Yeah, I mean, pretty interesting package, but when you count kind of documents, you need to keep in consideration that maybe 90% of them are some kind of memorandums of agreements, so not like real things. There are a lot of real things, you know, about transportation, about the construction of a new railway linking Samarkand and Aini district, also you know, electrification of current railways, you know, additional buses and you know, additional flights. So a lot of transportation, a lot of, let's say, connecting things that would people would be able to travel back and forth. That is a good positive sign, I would say, that they're really paying attention to this part of cooperation, because things obviously start with a lot of travel between two countries, and apparently they are ready to go ahead with that. They're ready to eliminate these travel restrictions and the registration requirements of both citizens. So apparently, you know, especially Tajik business circles would be able freely travel to Uzbekistan, and the same Uzbeks will be easily travel to Tajikistan. But that remains to be seen, you know, on paper, on the statement levels, that what is expected. We sort of expecting a lot of travel between two countries.
That the easing of this restriction, Elisher, I guess, maybe we might want to explain that a little bit further. You are saying like the requirement of registration will be lifted when the citizen of Tajikistan travels to Uzbekistan or vice versa, and they can stay for 10 days without a visa, I guess? That's what we are referring to?
No, they can come without visa, but after they come, they need to be registered somehow, you know, immediately.
So that's what they...
That causes a lot of problems, because you visit your relatives, and then the next day you need to show up at the police station, register with hotels. So it causes a lot of fuss and for people, especially there are a lot of, especially in the border areas, people kind of...
Families are separated,
traveling back and forth. That is a very difficult thing.
That's a very important step, I guess. So, Bruce, what stands out to you? I mean, one thing that also comes to my mind is, Alisha was referring to earlier, the agreement on the transit corridor. I think this must be a good news for Tajikistan, given that, you know, that was not possible for a long time and Tajikistan kind of felt isolated in the corner.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, the most obvious way into or out of Tajikistan is the easiest way anyway, is by land, is going through Uzbekistan. There's no doubt about that. You know, and if you consider the problems that Tajikistan is having with Kyrgyzstan on the border right now, it's even more important that they have these good relations with Uzbekistan. Mm. You know, for years, they had a hard time moving cargo and even moving people, migrant laborers, for instance, you know, through Uzbek territory. It was real, real difficult. Mm. So the fact that Uzbekistan is opening up its travel infrastructure to Tajikistan and Tajik citizens is nothing but good news. Mm. And they were even talking about some kind of unified transportation space or something. Mm. You know, so like I said, it's like a 180-degree turn from where they were for most of the history when Karimov was in power. And it was real hard to get anything through by road or rail in or out of Tajikistan.
Yeah, this is certainly very good news, as you say, Bruce, for Tajikistan. But what is Uzbekistan gaining by opening up this corridor for Tajikistan?
Well, you know, there's always transit fees. That's good. And, you know, and it's obviously beneficial to have strong ties and friendly ties with your neighbors. You know, it prevents a lot of problems. You know, both sides were working against each other for many, many years when Karimov was in power. You know, people were arrested for spying for Tajikistan who were in Uzbekistan. You know, but both sides kept enemies of the other country on their territory, or at least knew they were there. You know, so you'd like to think that those days are kind of over. You know, and part of the transport deals, right, especially with the trains and stuff, is Azadlik and Azadia, I think, believe both suggested, was that Uzbekistan can take advantage of, like, mining. They can join in mining ventures with Tajikistan and transport it out through Uzbekistan. So there's a method to this. It's almost the Chinese method, right, where you get the infrastructure all built and help the other side do it, and then you get into the extracting whatever you're doing and moving it out of the country where it's located, you know, through your country, possibly for your use or further on for export. You know, it's something that'll benefit both of them. Tajikistan could certainly use another trade partner and an investment partner besides, you know, just Russia and China, and then some small investments by other countries.
And also, Selim John, of course, feel free to jump in and add anything you would like to add into the specific topic that we were talking about here in terms of the transportation corridor, the importance of this for Tajikistan. And I was just wondering, when I was asking that question to Bruce, to you, I mean, this was such an important thing for Tajikistan, so Mirziyayev should be expecting something in exchange of this for Uzbekistan while opening up the transportation corridor. Maybe not, but anyhow, very important article in the agreement. But the other thing I was looking into this, Selim John, that the leaders also agreed on establishing some sort of a united power plant in some river close to the Tajik-Uzbek border. What's that about?
Yes, they agreed to jointly to build two hydropower plants in Zarafshan River. Zarafshan will start from Maschur region and goes until Samarkand. It's crossing the border. Ironically, those projects originally were introduced by China at the Karimov's epoch, and Karimov was fiercely against those projects, and that's why China decided not to do this. And now Uzbekistan is building those power plants. But probably we know that both sides still have no final agreement about Rovan power plant. And as we remember, again, Karimov's era, Uzbekistan was against this project. And even Mr. Mirziyoyev himself had been sending a lot of letters against Rovan at the time.
But later he changed his position since he became a president. Like, didn't he give a green light of some sort to Tajikistan?
I think building those two small power plants may be a kind of exercise for the future for Uzbekistan to join the Rovan project. We don't know. Maybe they are discussing this. But what Uzbekistan will get in turn of opening transport corridor to Tajikistan, most probably, first of all, the Tajik market. I remember when in 2016, for the first time on the Mirziyoyev, borders were opened and the trade went like an explosion. The prices in Tajikistan went down even until 65%, especially in the border region. And then Tajik authority decided to introduce some measures to limit Uzbek goods in Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan itself also has done something to restrict some type of goods being transferred through the border. Of course, the Tajik economy in a bad shape, and Uzbekistan can easily gain the Tajik market. Maybe this will be a benefit of good relationship. But as Alisher pointed out, and Virus also, all that is mostly emotional candy bouquet relationships. You know, the Tajik society is still experiencing a kind of a goodwill and hopes about Mirziyoyev and seeing what he is doing as a country leader and what he's showing, of course, what as a PR also. All this stuff have a huge impact on Tajik society and people like him. And of course, on the other side, they are comparing Mirziyoyev with their own leader, and probably somehow they are thinking that if they wishing that if having a Mirziyoyev type leader. Of course, they knew little about what is really going on in Uzbekistan.
Of course, Bruce, you had a very interesting story which starts with the statement like what Selimjan was talking about, the Mirziyoyev's popularity in Tajikistan. We will get to that. I'm very interested to hear your points too. Alisher, one other point, you know, Selimjan was talking about the some of the joint ventures which includes in this 36 article agreement, like especially in the context of these two power plants that will be established close to the Uzbek-Tajik border. I mean, is there any discussion, is there any idea that are thrown out how it's going to work?
Yeah, I mean, in Uzbekistan, you know, there are a lot of now, let me put it in more correct way, a number of very powerful companies, very, very powerful, very rich companies. These are very closely associated with President Mirziyoyev himself. They're partially state companies, and, you know, these companies accumulated a lot of funds, a lot of money. They can use it inside the country, they can use it outside the country for Mirziyoyev's, let's say, image abroad, especially in the region. So when Mirziyoyev comes to Tajikistan, he promised to build some hydropower station. For that kind of companies, that is not a big deal to do. It's not like their choice whether they wanna do it or not. Again, they are talking about a number of other joint ventures too. You know, it's not only about hydropower, as I said, roads. It's about production, about textiles. Uzbekistan will build at least two hospitals, as far as I could get it, schools in the southern part of the country. So a lot of things they're ready to finance, to sponsor, but we need to understand that it's not like just a Santa Claus type of presence. Basically, as Salimjan put it very correctly, Uzbekistan hopes that Tajikistan's market, consumer market especially, will be available. And a lot of these deals come together with a credit line in exchange of selling Uzbek goods to Tajikistan. Uzbekistan will be able to access the market, and Uzbekistan is producing enormous, you know, kind of a goods these days, and they need to, you know, markets. So now they want to go beyond internal market, where money, especially hard currency, is scarce. And in Tajikistan, they still hope to get something. And the prices in Tajikistan are higher than in Uzbekistan. So that's another thing to tap into. So a lot of contracts, there are credits of Uzbekistan to Tajikistan in exchange of access to the market. That's interesting. It's a little bit different It's not like a China type of deal. It's a much, much, I would say, sober and less pompous. So more talks, but it's basically much less in numbers. So things that they can do, they just doing things that should be done or should have been done years ago. So it's nothing like something of progressive course. Or like something, I would say, innovative or something, you know. The buses between two countries, I mean, the flights between two countries, these are obvious, or businesses and or joint projects, joint, let's say, water projects. It should have been done a long time ago. And they're now just going through these particular points, I think.
Yeah, of course, as both of you were saying, Salimjan and Alicia, of course, none of those things could be out of just goodwill. So there must be some interests behind it. Bruce, perhaps it's not a joint venture, like the type of things that Salimjan and Alisher was talking about. There was also an article about the security cooperation in the context of the developing situation in Afghanistan. I think this is the exact word they explained that. I guess what I have in mind is, so what's your take on that article? What kind of security cooperation they are likely thinking about?
Well, sharing intelligence about what's happening on the other side of each other's borders, you know, what's happening south of the Tajik border, what's happening south of the Uzbek border, so they can keep track of it. You know, you have your own podcast about Pakistan and Afghanistan. So you would have noticed today that in Takhar and Balkh, you know, that there's huge problems. And then, you know, Balkh is south of Uzbekistan and Takhar is south of Tajikistan. So if they can exchange the kind of information, what they know, obviously they have their own people on the ground inside Afghanistan or people that they talk to regularly. So just to get an idea of what's happening, because inevitably right now these battles are happening all over the place. One place is fighting and then, you know, there's nothing going on in between. But the longer this goes on, the more these battles are going to kind of merge together in places. And it's going to be important for the two governments to know what's happening, especially about non-state actors, including their own citizens who might decide to come back north of the border and by themselves or in small groups and see if they can't cause some problems up there.
Interesting. Of course, we do not know much of the details yet, details of all these agreements that they have signed. But from the outlook, the visit and the list of agreements that they have signed gives us an impression of a landslide change in bilateral relations when compared to what it used to be during the Karimov era in Uzbekistan. However, there are still issues that remain to be tackled in the bilateral relations of these two countries. I guess that were not touched in these discussions, in the bilateral discussions or the agreements that they have signed. So what are they? And also, what does the timing of this visit tell us and what comes next? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Alisher Siddiq, the director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Uzbek service, locally known as Ozotlik. Salimjan Ayubov, the director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Tajik service, locally known as Radio Azadi. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Press Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Press Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the Uzbek-Tajik relations in the context of President Mirziyoyev's visit to Tajikistan this week. So all is well with the agreements, Salimjan, but the bilateral relations of these two countries, as you were talking about, were as such that there are lots of issues yet to be settled. So what comes to your mind when you think of remaining issues in the bilateral relations of these two countries, which didn't make to the list of these 36 agreements?
Yes, first of all, as I mentioned, we haven't seen final agreement on the Rovan hydroelectric station. Still, we don't know real position of Uzbekistan because it's clear when it will be ready, it will give Tajikistan a kind of control tool controlling water flow to Uzbekistan first. Second, also with regard of economic and trade agreements, you know, as I mentioned, again, the Tajik economy is weak and consumer market is now full of Chinese goods, but a lot of those goods have been transferring through Kyrgyzstan from China. Now the Kyrgyz border is closed. So, but we don't know what will happen if the market, the Tajik market, will open its doors to the Uzbek goods. And on this regard, we know that the many parts of the Tajik economy monopolized by the certain people close to the ruling elite, and they enjoying a lot of special rules and benefits to make long buck. And what will happen when the Uzbek companies will come and will try to see a healthy rivalry on the market. And so there could be, again, some problems. And also, as Alisher mentioned, both presidents opened a Tajik school in Urgut region of Samarkand, the province of Uzbekistan. It's a kind of small reference to the life and opportunities of the ethnic Tajiks in Uzbekistan. And we know that some experts before Mirziyoyev's visit in Tajikistan have been pointing out this problem that both leaders has never been talking about the ethnic Tajiks in Uzbekistan, whose schools are shrinking, who has no opportunities to get a higher education because of the language differences and alphabet differences and things like this. So now, as I said, it's kind of can we book it emotional relationship, but some days it will be past and real problems will come out. But so far, they didn't touch this problem. So not a huge list of untouched problems, but mostly the impression is that two countries want to show others that they are so close historically, and today they resolved a lot of past problems, a lot of problems of the Karimov's era. And so one expert is saying that together it's more than 40 million people of the region, and if they will act together and if they will act kind of coordination, they can build the weather in the whole region. I heard this type of expertise from Tajik side, and probably it's mostly declarative, and we don't know what will happen afterwards, but so far we have this type of situation.
You know, maybe someone else would like to jump in here. I mean, Selimjan was referring to this the message of solidarity coming out of this visit, like, you know, together they are 40 million people, and when they act together, lots of, you know, miracles happen. That brings me to sort of a kind of a timing of this visit, perhaps say Alisher or Bruce or whoever wants to jump in here. The timing comes at a time when Tajikistan just had a huge tension with another neighbor of itself, with Kyrgyzstan. Also, given the fact that this tension on the at the border between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan still high, it's hot. So the visit comes kind of in the wake of that. Is there any possible connection to that in terms of the timing of this visit?
I don't think it's kind of connected in terms of timing to this inter-ethnic conflict between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. I mean, I think Uzbekistan trying to distance itself, you know, lately from these mutual kind of disagreements and act like equally with both sides. I don't think that they would particularly, you know, talk about it, or at least in public. And because the same projects and the same offers of joint ventures and economic relations, Uzbekistan is also offering the same to Kyrgyzstan on one hand, and it's also offering the same to Afghanistan. And so they kind of are playing a different sort of a game now, and realized finally that Uzbekistan would benefit more in the region if it plays the openness game, because it is the most populous country, and more they can produce and more they can sell. So they no longer restrict themselves now inside Uzbekistan. So they need new markets, they need to go out. So that's the realization.
Certainly that is the case. Also, I wondered, Bruce, your thoughts. I mean, when I look into this, I can't avoid thinking about this from the outlook, the visit and the list of agreements that they have signed, joint ventures, is a kind of gives the impression of a political support to the leader who has just gone through huge tension with the another neighbor of itself.
So, the first thing I would have to say about this is that this meeting was planned well in advance, far earlier than the actual border problems with between Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. And most of these agreements, of course, would have been worked out by then, too. So the only thing that Mirziyoyev could have really done would have been to cancel the visit, which would have been arguably as bad or worse than going ahead with it as it was planned. I agree. The optics don't look good. You know, that it's just it's the same, like Rahmon had already agreed to go to Moscow for the Victory Day parade, and then he ends up being the only foreign leader, and Putin spent more time with him than anybody else when he was at the thing. And if you're in Kyrgyzstan and you see this, you know, you got to wonder what's going on. And I'm sure there's people in Kyrgyzstan who are watching what's happening in Dushanbe and now Hojand, and also going, wow, this is not good. You know, Uzbekistan's a huge neighbor and everything. This would, you know, I like the way Ali Shear said, you know, publicly. That they haven't really said anything about that. Now, obviously, this is something they've talked about. You know, Mirziyoyev, he's only been president since 2016, but he's been prime minister since 2003. So he would remember very well the 2005 revolution in Kyrgyzstan, the 2010 revolution in Kyrgyzstan, and then what happened last year again. And you know, both of them have got to wonder about this. One, it's a bad example for both their countries that you can have these popular uprisings that end up ousting a president. And two, it's a problem with stability even for them, you know, country, because they don't know how soon, you know, will Kyrgyzstan settle down right away? Okay, so far in three times it's happened. But what if it gets away from them and you have civil unrest that goes on for weeks or months? You know, then they have a problem, and you know, a different kind of problem along both their borders. So this is, you know, this has got to be something that they talked about and probably are still talking about and talk about by phone, too, is what to do. The Uzbek government and Tajik government are far more similar to each other than either one is to the Kyrgyz government. So the Kyrgyz government is the oddball in this whole, among those three states.
Yeah. You know, when the conflict was taking place, that the fighting or the tension was there, there was also a claim by some of the writers or the authors whose thinking are close to the Uzbek authorities, saying that the role that Mirziyoyev might have played in easing this tension down, perhaps there is something there, I guess. But I know we also need to wrap up the discussion. I'm just looking to my notes if there's anything we have missed discussing so far. Yeah, just one thing, though, actually. We spoke about if there was anything that which still remains untouched in the bilateral relations of these two countries. And also, from the perspective of all these agreements that were signed, what comes next after this? And I know there was an invitation by Mirziyoyev for Rahmon to come to visit Uzbekistan, which is great. That's one thing that we are looking at. Is there anything else that we should be looking at in terms of what comes next after this? You know, lots of, you know, goodwills being expressed and lots of agreements being signed. Anything else that you are particularly looking at, Salim John, in terms of what comes next?
Thank you, Mohammed. But going back to the question about the how it's seen, Mirziyoyev's visit to Tajikistan on the background of the border conflict, I should add one point that I heard some comments by Tajik pro-government expert that, of course, it's a kind of support of Rahmon, it's support of Tajikistan for what happened in the border and things like this. Maybe to some extent, but again, other experts are saying that in terms of what the next, Rahmon needs power transfer to his son. And that's why he needs a stable, reliable partner like Mirziyoyev. And it's looking like Mirziyoyev also is aimed at a long stay in power. And he also needs a reliable partner, at least in the region. And probably in this regard, both sides' wishes are coincide somehow. And that's why it's bringing a lot of emotional and human favor to the relationship. It's difficult to say what name because when the real economic and national interests will start playing main role, we don't know what will happen. So again, now Mirziyoyev is popular in Tajikistan because of his way of ruling the country, and especially, as I found out, it's about his relation to Islam, which is completely different than what Rahmon is doing in Tajikistan. But all this stuff maybe are not eternal, and we don't know what will happen in some 2, 3, 5 years from now.
Okay. Let me take Bruce and Alicia, your thoughts on the same question very, very briefly, if possible, in terms of what comes next after this in the bilateral relations of these two countries. What are the areas you guys will be looking at? Let's start with you, Alicia, and then Bruce. With that, we will end the conversation.
Yeah, I'm looking at the how they will kind of succeed to establish common rules of making business. And I'm looking at how they're gonna, you know, create this atmosphere of a mutual trust. Because, you know, everything what they do is about investing in one country. And then if something happens, that all investments are lost because countries are authoritarian. They can just kick each other very quickly, shut down the border. You know, they're not a kind of a playing by sort of international kind of things, in the past at least. You know, everything could switch off and switch on very drastically. Yeah. So that is a big problem for me. You know, if something happens tomorrow at the border, you know, everything is gone, all the projects are gone or something. So I want to see something that builds this long-term trust between two countries. That's one thing. And second, most important thing, is the thing that I already mentioned. I like that people will be traveling. And personally, I think these two nations in Central Asia, you know, they are the closest to each other in terms of customs, you know, look and everything, you know, the way of living and lifestyle. Just they speak different language. But I don't know any other nation in Central Asia that's so close to each other. But this is not, let's say, well explained or well understood. So they're doing it on official level, you know, this top official level, singers come, sing and come and go. But that, I don't see the same kind of interaction, wide, big interaction on the people's level, on the, you know, grassroots level, where people like understand each other and talk to each other, and they don't have any prejudices against each other, because a lot of prejudices, this is still big problem. You know, you're Uzbeks, you're Tajiks, so that's a big problem which should not exist, and somehow that thing should be tackled. And how? I mean, they need to send students, more students to each other, you know, they need to have more trips, travels, tourism. So I'm looking forward to see this kind of development.
Okay. Bruce, your thoughts, and with that we will end the conversation. When Alicia was talking about, I was also thinking, you know, recently, like in the early days of Mirziyoyev coming to power and relaxation at the borders in various directions, there was a market was established on the Tajik side of the border where Uzbek products would come in to be sold. And then I guess, if I'm not mistaken, that market since has been closed. And there was also complaints about the compatibility of the Tajik market with the price that Uzbek products were coming into Tajikistan. So what I'm saying is, like, as Alicia said, I mean, this whole thing looks like, from the economic perspective, like one country investing in the other country. So I'm just picturing a situation in which Uzbek companies will come to Tajikistan and start, I don't know, investing in this area, in that area, in that area. What kind of response can be expected from the Tajik companies? I mean, when they are not able to compete against bigger, richer, experienced Uzbek companies coming in. I guess my question just went beyond what I initially thought to ask from you. I mean, where your eyes will be from that perspective in the coming days?
All right, I'll do both real quick. I think that Tajik businesses would be would probably be happy to see Uzbek investment and investors and investment coming in there, as opposed to dealing with people who are farther away or you know, or from far richer countries. I would think they would be much happier dealing with people who, from their own region, who understood, you know, what was possible a lot better than someone, you know, a company from China, Russia, the West, something like that. So, you know, I don't see there being a big problem. Obviously, there's going to be some market corrections that are going to have to go on as trans-border trade grows. You know, you mentioned that. Salim John brought it up too. I believe it was Uzbek eggs were the problem early on after they opened the border, where Uzbek eggs were so much cheaper. No one was buying Tajik eggs. That was a small example of what was going on there. As for where my eyes are going to be, you know, I think, again, both Salim John and Ali Sheard pointed out probably the biggest things. The relationship between these two countries, between the governments, is only going to get stronger. That there's just no doubt about it, because they're in this together. Rahmon can't put his son in power without Uzbekistan support. It's hard to believe that could possibly happen. And you know, if Mirziyoyev does intend to stay on for a long time, then it will be important that he has support from Tajikistan at the same time. Ali Sheer brought out the point that, you know, that these peoples are more like each other than either of them are like any of the other peoples in Central Asia. Mm-hmm. You know, Tajiks and Uzbeks have lived together for so long, side by side, mixed neighborhoods, mixed marriages, on and on. They're not like the Kyrgyz, Kazakhs, and Turkmen in terms of tradition. Even physically, they don't look that much like the Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, and Turkmen. And they represent 45 million people, almost. Mm-hmm. You know, that's about 60% of the population in Central Asia. So as they get to be more friendly with each other, renew old ties and create new ties based on, you know, priorities within the governments for support, you got to wonder how the rest of the region is going to look at this. You know, when they go, well, that, you know, that's 45 million people who have been getting along for centuries. Where does that leave us, the Kyrgyz, us, the Kazakhs, or us, the Turkmen in this equation all of a sudden?
You know, one more question came to my mind. Is there anything that could still derail this apparently a positive development? What comes to your mind when we think from this perspective?
A security threat, terrorism. It has every time. Anytime something like that happens in Central Asia, all of a sudden they're enemies amongst each other, and it's not just the Tajiks and the Uzbeks.
What kind of security threat do you think of?
Well, IMU, you know, different militant groups that come in. One side doesn't think the other side is doing enough to eliminate them. Or the other side knows where they are, but they won't say. Or, you know, like I said, we've seen this before. Mm-hmm. They're all friends until there's a security threat. You know, like I said, terrorism gets there. And then everyone has their own expectations about how you're supposed to deal with this, and they want the other countries to fall into line with their expectations of how to confront the threat.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that, you know, the biggest threat among any Central Asian state is, of course, who doesn't want Central Asia to be united, to be the one force, and, you know, to be one economic or transport space? It's Russia. So, and they can, you know, find us weak spots to play with. So that is a big thing, and need to be vigilant on not to be in the hands of Russia to, you know, to go so fast and
the
minor thing.
No, very, very interesting point here, Alisher. Thank you very much. You know, it's amazing how time flies, and my intention was to conclude this conversation within 35 minutes. We are already over time, but it's great to have all of you guys on board, and thank you very much for your perspectives on this topic. So with this, we have to end the conversation. Thank you very much, Alisher Siddiq, the director of Free Free the Liberties Uzbek Service, locally known as Ozotlik, Salimjan Ayubov, the director of Free Free the Liberties Tajik Service, locally known as Ozodi, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free the Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Again, thank you very much for your time and thoughts today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free the Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.